Reading The Unknown Reality by Jane Roberts, A Seth Book, Volume 2. Okay, so this is session 726, and at the beginning, Jane comments before Seth comes in saying that she's getting a cluster of images of islands, which is what this whole session is about, is the island analogy. So it's kind of interesting to note the unknown reality. It cannot be expressed in the cozy terms of known knowledge, and so you must stretch your own imagination, rouse yourself from mental lethargy, and be bold enough to discard old dogmatic comfort blankets. Imagine that you are a small sandy island with soft grated shores, some palm trees, and a haven for traveling birds. Pretend further that you are quite content, though sometimes lonely. A fine fog encircles you, though it does not prevent the sun from shining directly down. You feel quite independent. And you think of the fog as a kind of cocoon that gently shields you from the great expanse of an endless sea. Then, however, you begin to wonder about the other islands that you know exist beyond your vision. Are they like you? Your wondering forms a tiny window in the fog, and you look through, astonished. You discover that a small coral path unites you with the next island that is glimpsed, shimmering now through the ever-growing window in the mist. Who is to say where you end and the other island begins? As you wonder, more astonished still, you discover other coral paths extending from you in all directions. These lead to further islands. Quote, they are all me, end quote, you think, though each is very different. There's going to be a lot of quotes in this session, just so you guys know, so try to follow along as best as you can. It'll be a lot easier if you are watching a screen. But he goes on, he says, one may have no trees at all. And another be the home of a volcano. Some may be filled with soft grasses, innocent of sand. These other islands. Now, this first island is very clever indeed, and so it sends its spirit wandering to the closest counterpart and says, quote, you are myself, but without sand or palm trees. End quote. Now its neighbor responds, saying, quote, I know you are me without my towering volcano, ignorant of the thundering magic of flowing lava, calm and rather stupid, if the truth be known. End quote. The spirit of the two islands join for a journey to a third one. And there they discover a top-heavy land filled to the brim with strange birds and insects and animals that neither knew at home. The first island says to the third, quote, you are myself, only unbearably social. How can you stand to nurture so many different kinds of life? End quote. The second island spirit says also to the third, quote, you are myself. Only my excitement, my joy, and beauty are concentrated in the magic of my volcano, and you instead stand for the twittering excitement of diverse species, birds and animals and insects, that flow in far less grandiose fashion across the slopes of your uneasy land. End quote. The third island, startled, replies, quote, I am myself, and you must be imperfect versions of my reality. I would no more be a dull island of only sand and palms, or a neurotic landscape of burning lava, any more than I would be a snail. My life is far the better, and you two are only poor shadowy counterparts of me. End quote. The first island responds in our hypothetical dialogue, saying, quote, I suspect that each of us is quite correct, and more, I wonder if we are really islands at all. End quote. The second island says, quote, suppose my spirit visits your island for a while to discover what it is like to possess palm trees, a few birds, and a tranquil shore. I will give up my volcano for a while and try to make an honest evaluation if you will in turn come to my land and promise to view it without prejudice. Perhaps then you will understand the great majesty and explosive power of my exotic world. End quote. The third island says, quote, I am myself too busy for such nonsense. The many species that roam my domain demand my attention, and if you too want to exchange your realities, that is fine, but leave me out of it, please. End quote. So, the spirit of the first island visits the second one and finds itself amazed. It feels an ever-thrusting power rushing up from beneath that erupts in always changing form. Yet it is always itself comparing its experience to what it has known. When the volcano itself, ceaselessly erupting, wishes for peace, the spirit of the first island thinks of its own quiet home shores. The volcano learns a new lesson. It can direct its power in whatever way it chooses, shooting upward or lying quietly. It can indeed be dormant and dream for centuries. It can, if it chooses, allow soft sands to lie gracefully upon its cooling expanse. In the meantime, the spirit of that volcanic island is visiting the first island and finds itself enchanted by the still waters that lap against the shore, the gentle birds, and the few palm trees. However, it seems that the palm trees and the birds in the sand have dreamed for centuries. So take note that this dreaming for centuries, in the notes, Rob states that it's reminiscent of Seth's moment point, or the present. It's the point of an interaction between all existences and realities. So let's go on, and it states, one day a bird flies out further from the first island than ever before to another one, and comes back with a strange seed that falls from its beak. The seed grows. From it springs a completely new and unknown species of plant, as far as the island is concerned. And the plant in turn brings forth flowers with pollen, fruits, and scents that have a different kind of creativity that is still its own. The spirit of the second island then brings forth elements in the first island that were not active earlier, but it becomes homesick, and so it finally returns to its own land. What a transformation! Its volcano, it finds, now gives birth to soil and pollen. Its excitement roused in a million different ways. It meets the spirit of the first island that has been living there and says, quote, what a change! I would like a still more spectacular display. The flowers are not nearly colorful or wild enough. It is, if you will forgive me, too well tamed. Yet, all in all, you've done wonders. Now, however, I'd like a cultural interchange with others still unknown. And if you don't mind, I wish you'd go home. This is, after all, me and my land, end quote. The spirit of Island One says, quote, I quite enjoyed my venture, and I've learned that the great explosive thrusts of creativity are good, but oh, I yearn for my own quiet, undisturbed shores, and so if you don't care, I think I'll return there, end quote. And so it does, to find a land in some ways transformed. The sands still lie glittering, but the fog and mists are gone. The beloved birds have multiplied, and there is, in the old familiar sameness, a new, muted, but delightful refrain. New species in keeping with the old, but more vigorous. The spirit of Island One realizes that it would find the old conditions quite boring now, and the new alterations fill it with pleasing excitement and challenge. What a delightful interchange, for the spirit is convinced that it definitely improved the condition of Island Two, and there is no doubt that the spirit of the second island improved Island One beyond degree. In the meantime, Island Three's spirit has been thinking. The spirit of Island One and Two did not appeal to it, or to him or her in any of these cases, if you prefer, did not appeal to it at all. It was determined to retain its own identity, yet it too has become lonely, and it has seen endless coral paths reaching out from itself. Its spirit followed one such path and came upon a desert island upon which nothing grew. Figuratively, its image was appalled. Quote, how can you stand such barrenness? End quote. It calls to the spirit of this fourth island. That desert island spirit responds, saying, quote, even the vigor of your question sickens me. I sense that you come from a land so overcrowded and tumultuous that it makes my sands blanch even further, and the knuckles of my rocks turn white, end quote. Island Three's spirit says, quote, you are myself, utterly devoid of feeling, dead and barren, end quote. The spirit of the desert island replies, quote, I am myself. You must be some counterpart, drunken with sensation, not realizing the purity of my own stripped-down nothingness, end quote. The two confront each other sideways, for neither can look in the other's eyes. What opposites, what contrasts, what fascinations. So they strike a bargain. The spirit of the desert island says, quote, you are all wrong. I will go to your land and prove it, and you can stay here and partake of the joys of my peaceful existence, and, I hope, learn the value of austerity, end quote. So the spirit of Island Four journeys to that other reality, where all kinds of life swarm over shore and mountain. And the spirit of the third island visits a world of such peace that all motion seems stilled. What peace! Yet in the peace, what power! And so little by little, cacti grow where there were none, delicate buds opening, filled with water. The spirit of the third island immediately begins to transform the desert island. Great changes appear, and showers of power, quick bursts of rain, explosive inundations of energy. In the meantime, the spirit of the desert island is almost overwhelmed by the teeming life forms on Island Three. So next, it visits the volcanic one, and when the volcano becomes frightened of its own energy, the spirit of the desert island says, quote, "Peace. It is all right to sleep, all right to dream. You do not need to be so worried for your energy. It can flow swiftly or slowly in surges of dreams that take ages. Do as you will," end quote. So the volcano throws its energy into the formation of still more new species, while the desert spirit sings its calmness through their tissues. But this new life confounds it also, and it yearns to return home to its old quietude. There, the spirit of the third island has quickened the desert's abilities, so that it blooms with muted flowers not present before. The two spirits meet. Each island is changed. Quote, "We are counterparts, each of the other, yet inviolate," end quote. And the spirit of the volcanic island says to the spirit of the first island, quote, "My volcano knows now how best to use its energy. It can shoot into the heavens in great displays, or creep into the tiny crevices of earth, equally powerful," end quote. And the spirit of the first island responds, quote, "You have taught my island that life is not something to be afraid of, though still it is translated in my own familiar, gentle terms," end quote. Seth says, "This is the end of our analogy. The spirit of each of the four islands was itself intact, and the interchanges were chosen. You are not islands unto yourselves except when you choose to be. Each counterpart views reality from its own viewpoint, and there is never any invasion." Okay, so I'm not reading these parts, but you guys can pause and read if you'd like. Seth goes on, but he says, "This is not dictation, but in the terms of our analogy, some island spirits are gamblers. So you and Rupert are gamblers. You gambled above all that your instincts would lead you in the proper direction, and that you would, quote, win out, end quote, despite the, quote unquote, odds, as you understood them. You are willing counterparts of each other, and have been, in your terms, before, each playing out, quote unquote, opposite aspects of each other, yet merging for common purposes and goals. So, in one century, you were Nabeen," he's talking to Rob, "and Rupert was indeed the, quote unquote, prostitute priestess. And so did you challenge each other, as in different ways you do now, with tendencies that appear to be opposites, but are instead different ways of approaching the same kind of challenge. If you could understand, it would help in many areas you do not as yet suspect." Seth directs this to Rob. He says, You viewed aspects, counterparts of your father's reality. That reality invades no other. As in the analogy given this evening, the spirit of no island invaded any other, but looked momentarily with permission through another's picture of reality. Your mother and father are alive. Technically, they're dead, but he's making a point. They're alive. Your mother and father are alive, as are Rupert's parents, but their realities are not pinpointed to any given island. And they are forming alliances, but always from the standpoint of their own unique identities. Your own private identities do not need fences. They are themselves. They can combine and unite with others, yet retain their uniqueness and experience. Only your concepts limit your understanding of that prime freedom. Again, talking to Rob, he states, one strand of your mother's consciousness, that one involved with you, is intertwined with your reality because of her interest in homes. Another strand of hers is involved because of her interest in families, and hence with the children of your two brothers, Lyndon and Richard. If you haven't read volume, pause. If you haven't read volume one, this might not make much sense about the homes, and even his brothers, but there'll be a little bit of information in the notes. Seth goes on. He says, now, in a way, your mother and Rupert were counterparts, for Rupert lives in a trust of individual abilities toward which your mother yearned, and Rupert gives a love to you which your mother yearned to give, yet while retaining her identity to a man. So that can be kind of confusing. So Rupert gives her love to Rob, which Rob's mother yearned to give to a particular man. And as Seth goes on, he says, your mother understood love's purpose and felt its presence in Rupert. At the same time, she was actually annoyed when she felt that you were not following your commercial artistic ability through, despite her surface misunderstanding of it. She, or let's just say Stella Butts, since that's who it is, Stella Butts identified with you to some extent, and to some unrecognizable degree was, quote, only masculine now, end quote, in her understanding of power. I hope you will recognize what I mean. But in the light of her understanding at the time, children were to be used as power, as a man might use weapons. Stella Butts changed and grew, but in certain terms she was the masculine center of the family, emotions or not, the aggressive one. And speaking conventionally now, your father, Robert Sr., accepted the more passive creative role. This has meaning in terms of your unpublished information involving the masculine and feminine aspects that united and separated your parents. Your father would have been more quote-unquote comfortable as a woman, and she, your mother, as a male. Yet, for their own purposes, they each chose to experience the other side of the coin, so to speak. This will make more sense to you later. And he says, consciousness is not limited. Identities can mix and merge while retaining their inviolate nature and memories. This is all for now, but again, later you will see where it relates and how you can disperse your own characteristics into another, and they can disperse theirs into you with your consent and theirs to form new aspects of reality and to cast new light on combined purposes and challenges. So that's the end of the session and session note number one. I already kind of gave that to you as I was reading, but you'll get more for the moment points or the present, same thing, in note 11 for appendix 12 when I read that. So for note 3, about Jane being a prostitute priestess, that's in unpublished material, so that isn't gonna really make much sense to anybody, except that now we know that she was a prostitute priestess in another century. So 4 is just basically saying that all 4 of their parents had died within a period of less than 3 years, and at the time of this session they were all dead. Now note number 5 says, in volume 1 Seth described the role a non-physical Stella Butts played in Jane's and Rob's house hunting activities. So So you'll find that information in the 693rd session. And I'm skipping the rest of the notes, but I'm going to show you guys them in case you want to read them. And then there's more information in the 679th session for Rob's parents and information. Hopefully you guys have just run through the whole playlist for Tim Hart Hart's Volume 1 of this book. That would be really ideal. And I just want to show you guys real quick. The next video is going to be officially the last section, section 6, on reincarnation and counterparts, the quote-unquote past seen through the mosaics of consciousness. And I just want to say that I hope this session wasn't too confusing, that I read it fluidly. Might take a couple of times listening. The first time I read it, I was a bit confused, and reading it again before recording it, I was like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. But I love the analogy. All in all, it's pretty transparent. You get where he's going with the whole counterparts thing. But anyways, until next time, thank you for watching.